from Monday on, we focused on four things. Number one was perfect effort, and that's just playing as hard as you can on every snap. Second thing was being physical and playing tough football. Third one was doing what we're coached to do, and the fourth one was just a call to invest. Invest your time and energy in being the best you can, preparing your body and your mind this week.
This is the Signal Caller Podcast.
From the X's to the O's to the Jimmies and the Joes.
Your inside look at West Virginia Mountaineer football, the Big 12 Conference, and the college game at large.
Now, coming to you from high atop the majestic mountains of almost heaven,
here's your host,
Jed Drenning.
Welcome to it, folks. We're rolling right along to episode 12 of the Signal Caller Podcast. Couple things on the agenda today. We'll be taking a look back at that tackle football game in Morgantown. You might have heard about it, between the Mountaineers and the North Carolina State Wolfpack. As it turned out, the sky didn't fall following West Virginia's trip to Missouri, and the rivers didn't run dry. And we're also, of course, going to take a look ahead to the Mountaineers' trip to Lawrence, Kansas this weekend to face off against a suddenly feisty group of Kansas Jayhawks led by Les Miles.
Better known as the Mad Hatter.
They say the biggest improvement a team makes tends to be between week one and week two. Now, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But I have always felt that by week three, the narrative for what a team is looking ahead to really starts to unfold. That's about the point where the rubber starts to meet the road and you begin to get more than just glimpses at what a football team might start to become. Once a team gets three games in the books, more often than not, that team has probably faced some kind of adversity, if not for the balance of an entire 60 minutes, then at least at various points throughout the course of one or more of those three games. No matter who you've played through those three games, you have enough reps on tape, enough situations to scrutinize, and enough tough situations that you've had to overcome or not overcome, irrespective of the opponent, that certain determinations can start to be made about a football team. Now, all football teams, of course, are a work in progress. They're not a finished product by any stretch a quarter of the way through the season. That is absolutely not the case at all. The larger point here is, once you get three games to draw from, you can sometimes start to get a sense about a team's resiliency, how they band together in tough times. And of course, tough times comes in a lot of different forms. It might mean Alabama as a heavy favorite against Duke, starting the season out with a three and out on its first series, followed by a fumble on its second series.
Here's the pressure up the middle. Tagovailoa, they had him, and he can't escape. Tua Tagovailoa is dropped.
Done a great job early in this game confusing Tagovailoa.
Again, it's four, try on the right side, hit at the line, the football came out, Duke says they have it.
And being held scoreless for the first 20 minutes before rallying as a football team and obviously putting together what turned out to be a blowout win. Adversity doesn't have to come in heavy doses. Sometimes the sample size is small, like it was in that case. Then, of course, there are times that you find yourself drinking from the fire hose of adversity, as West Virginia was following its 38-7 loss in Columbia. Through two games, the Mountaineers couldn't find a running game, mustering a total of just 64 yards through those two contests on the ground. Without a single run of 10 yards or more, West Virginia was unsettled on the offensive line. They were inconsistent on the perimeter in terms of their ability to make big plays. And on the defensive side, they'd already lost a key starter for the season, and they were struggling to stop the run. With far more questions than answers as we boarded that charter out of Columbia, the 2019 West Virginia football team's back was firmly against the wall. And things sure weren't going to get any easier. Next up was a 2-0 incredibly dangerous ACC team that had thoroughly dominated two overmatched opponents to start the season on their way as significant favorites to a September 14th trip to Morgantown. From the outside looking in, things probably appeared grim at best, hopeless at worst. If the Mountaineers' season after two games was a movie, it would probably be Million Dollar Baby. If it was a song, it would probably be written by George Jones after breaking the seal on some bad Tennessee whiskey.
He kept her picture on his wall.
But despite all the obstacles and all the challenges, the guy with the steady hand at the wheel, offering hope, was the same guy who, since shortly after arriving on campus, has been asking all of us to trust the climb.
Now, this is key, and I want you all to listen to me on this. I'm very disappointed in our performance, but I'm not discouraged, okay? And I want that to be heard loud and clear. I'm not discouraged.
So during this time of hardship, did Mountaineer Nation take their first-year coach at his word? Did they trust the climb? Well, as North Carolina State rolled into town, I'll let this video I took from the sidelines on my phone and the 57,052 West Virginia fans who rolled in at the same time answer that question for me.
I thought the crowd was huge today. They did a tremendous job. They stayed. They were loud. I thought they really were a factor on the third and fourth downs.
All things considered, after two Saturdays ago at Faurot Field in Columbia, Missouri, certainly no one could have guessed how this past Saturday at Mountaineer Field in Morgantown would have ended.
And the final seconds will come off of the clock. And on Gold Rush Saturday here at Milan Pushkar Stadium, Neil Brown will run across and meet Dave Doran, the NC State coach at midfield. West Virginia wins it 44-27, and it is a great day to be a Mountaineer wherever you may be.
It was a three-phase win. Start with special teams. You block a punt, then you got a great percentage to win the game.
Snap back. Punt blocked. They blocked the punt. It's a loose ball. West Virginia's got it. West Virginia's got it inside the 15-yard line. Logan Timmons blocked the punt off the foot of Trenton Gill.
Timmons comes through the middle. We didn't have a block called, but we always try to put pressure on the shield, and that's why we always do. We always have multiple people attacking the shield. He comes free. He blocked one in practice this week.
You'll never meet a head coach who doesn't claim to place some kind of priority on special teams, telling you what a critical part of the game it truly is. Such claims by a lot of coaches aren't much more than lip service. Neil Brown literally practices what he preaches, putting an incredible emphasis on that third but highly vital phase of the game. I recall something that struck me as interesting early in the year at a point before most of Neil Brown's staff had even been hired here in West Virginia. Vic Koenig, who had been hired, he was one of the first guys in town with Neil, was asked how he thought the rest of the defensive staff might round out. And his answer was interesting. He said a consideration had to be made that one of his assistants on the defensive side would likely assume the role of special teams coordinator, and in working with Neil before, he recognized the extra heavy lifting that would call for on that assistant coach. So that was something Koenig knew he would have to take into consideration when assembling his defensive staff and when meeting out the duties of that defensive staff.
Depends on who we end up getting on the staff. Special teams coach will probably come from the defensive side. We spend so much time, we do so many things special teams oriented that it truly is a third of the deal, and it's kind of unfair for that guy to coach too much on the defensive side. So there's just, there's going to be a lot of moving parts.
I'd never heard a coordinator make a comment like that, and I thought that was pretty telling. A peek into how the staff breaks down and how much importance Neil Brown really does place on the special teams aspect of the game. And of course, as it turned out, former Kansas State defensive coordinator Blake Seiler was hired by West Virginia not only as inside linebackers coach, but also to hold down that highly critical special teams coordinator role as well. It's a role he's obviously embraced, and he's done a terrific job with it so far. In the locker room at halftime against North Carolina State, Coach Seiler was on the grease board. He'd yanked players from both the offensive and defensive side of things to sit in front of the grease board and go over adjustments with him on one of the special teams units. Rest assured, the attention to detail that West Virginia fans are quickly starting to associate with Neil Brown and his staff isn't confined to offense and defense. This staff will also leave no special team stone unturned, and they're building a football team that takes great pride in their special teams units. Case in point, I was in the locker room immediately following the game when Neil Brown was addressing the team and quickly recapping some of the high points and the things that they'd done well. Nothing invoked a bigger cheer than when he mentioned that block punt. When Coach Brown brought up that play that Logan Timmons made to block that punt, the entire team nearly blew the roof off that locker room with their cheering. It was all the evidence I needed to see just how serious these Mountaineers really are about their special teams. Defensively, the Mountaineers held the North Carolina State ground game in check. They made life difficult for quarterback Matt McKay all day, finishing with 3 sacks, and a laundry list of remember-me shots while keeping McKay under 50% in the completion percentage department, and overall holding the Wolfpack offense to its lowest yards per play in a regular season game since 2016. But none of that really tells the whole story.
You look at defensively, we played much better in the second half. We had some guys go down during the game. You know, we had to play a lot of snaps. New guys in the secondary, but we found a way and played really good football in the second half.
In the second half, the West Virginia defense only allowed McKay to complete 38% of his passes for 72 yards, while holding the Wolfpack rushing attack to 1.7 yards per carry and holding the North Carolina State offense overall to an absurd 2.5 yards per play, allowing just 6 points after the intermission. Making this performance by the West Virginia defense even more impressive was that starting free safety Josh Norwood was lost in the first quarter to a targeting call, and West Virginia had to go the last 3.5 quarters of the game with true freshman free safety Kerry Martin holding down the back end, a guy who this time last year was focused on being the best quarterback he could be at Capital High School in Charleston.
And Kerry is a guy he's made so much improvement since going back to spring ball, because he went through spring practice, never played defense before. You know, never plays quarterback at Capital. Going through spring, he's getting a few reps, but he's third and fourth team. Then all of a sudden, we get about 3 or 4 weeks after spring ball, and he's in the two deep. And then a couple series into it to date, he plays every snap. I thought he did a really good job the second half. You know, the thing that I was most proud of him, he gave up that touchdown. He kind of backed up. The Thomas kid caught the touchdown in front of him. But he showed some real maturity because he came back and he played through that. And I thought the staff did a good job with him, too, building him up.
The Mountaineers entered the game a week after losing Taj Alston, a starter on the defensive line, for the remainder of the season. Then, early against NC State, they found themselves without their starting free safety and were forced to roll the true freshman. They fought through it with a next-man-up mentality. In that sense, it reminded me of a matchup back in 2014, when despite losing starting cornerbacks Darryl Worley and Terrell Chestnut to injury in the first half, West Virginia shut down the allegedly unstoppable Art Briles-Baylor offense, handing the Bears their only loss of 2014. And a stunning upset that would not only knock quarterback Bryce Petty out of Heisman contention, but ultimately prove to knock the Baylor Bears out of the first ever college football playoff.
They've been disruptive. Credit to West Virginia for their ability to get in that backfield and make Bryce Petty, a guy who I think is a Heisman hopeful, look like a mere mortal.
10 hurries, 3 knockdowns, 3 sacks. That was the game plan by Tony Gibson. Pressure Petty.
The irony, of course, was that Tony Gibson, the author of that 2014 defensive game plan against Baylor, was this time around on the opposite sideline, as Vic Koenig extended his streak as a defensive play caller to 24 consecutive games with a sack.
The quarterback, McKay, has the ball. It's a keep, and he gets drilled down to the turf and sacked. Dante Stills got him. The sophomore from Fairmont came in untouched.
And the best part might be the reason he came in untouched. West Virginia was chopping up the front with a twist, and what Dante did, he came from a 3 technique on the outside shoulder of the right guard and was able to loop around across the center's face and sneak into the A-gap on the opposite side and run free. Why, you might ask, was he able to run free? Because if you watch the game video, you'll see that his brother Darius, coming from the opposite side, what we call a 1 technique, on the inside shoulder of the left guard, was part of that twist as well. He crossed the center's face, thereby occupying both the center, Grant Gibson, and that right guard, Joshua Fed Jackson, and it paved the way for a completely uncontested path to the quarterback by his brother Dante. So for those reaching into their satchel full of attaboys, be sure to toss one Darius's way on that one as well.
Then offensively, we got our run game going. We had so many new faces out there, but I thought our communication was really good up front. And I thought our running backs ran the ball extremely hard. We were able to get the guys that we need to be big-time players for us were big-time players today. Guys like Sam James, Kennedy McCoy.
Kendall takes a snap, full blitz comes, it's a screen, it's going to go. Here's Sam James running to the 10, trips, falls, 5, still on his feet. He lunges in, touchdown! Sam James stumbling, fumbling, and making it to the near side pylon. Touchdown, West Virginia. A 20-yard catch and run. Great block thrown by running back Kennedy McCoy.
When your offensive line is struggling and you have 3 new faces in the starting lineup, the last thing a high-level play caller would do is move the game into a phone booth and ask those guys up front to rule the day. which is why West Virginia opened the game last week with what I would call vintage Neil Brown. If you've studied Neil Brown's offenses at his previous stops, you'll know that he's very creative. He tests the defense's eye discipline with shifts and motions, a lot of smoke and mirrors to push the game to the perimeter. You saw this when he was at Troy, elements of it in 2016 against Clemson, elements of it in 2017 in their win at Baton Rouge over LSU, elements of it last year when they went to Lincoln and knocked off Nebraska. The last thing Coach Brown will ever do is allow his offense to be a sitting target. He'll shift things around, he'll use misdirection, he'll throw a ton of different formations at you, he'll hold you to account with outside zone, RPOs, jet motion, fly sweeps, and all manner of screens, especially those that put stress on the defensive flanks. He'll do all this in an effort to get the defense to give chase east to west, sideline to sideline, confident that this methodical approach will create creases on the perimeter to get his players going north and south in space. Now, once he accomplishes this and the table is set, like a seasoned boxer who spends 6 or 7 rounds wearing you down, you'll see him mix in some body shots between the tackles.
We tried to get them running a lot east and west early. I think they had 1 or 2 guys out. And so we felt like we could get them moving east and west and we could get them north and south. We were more of an outside zone team today than we have been. Again, you're just trying to figure it out. When we played so poorly the first 2 weeks, you just keep trying to figure it out.
Well, West Virginia certainly figured it out with a 7-0 lead in the first quarter on play number 7 when they ran the Bob Stitt touch sweep to Sam James, a play, of course, made famous by Tavon Austin in the Orange Bowl against Clemson. James took the football going right to left, and it all started with the West Virginia offensive line swatting the Wolfpack front 7, including an effort by left tackle Colton McKivitz, in which he took out a defensive end and a linebacker like 2 bowling pins.
Colton, to me, he's a dude. He prepares like a dude. He plays like a dude. He leads like a dude.
And a dude he was as he collapsed the edge for Sam James, who bounced outside a Sean Ryan block and an effort by Javonte Haskins that helped James get to the edge. And once there, textbook blocks by Michael Laughlin and Kennedy McCoy helped create one of those creases out on the perimeter that we were talking about earlier. Once there, the only thing standing between Sam James and a house call was a tremendous effort by backside corner Tashawn Smith, who worked pursuit with a good angle that enabled him to take James down by the ankles with a diving effort inside the 25.
Kendall takes the next snap. Here's another toss play. And here's Sam James running, looking for blocking. Comes near sideline 30, 35, 40 down the sideline. He's a speed man. He's to the 40 of North Carolina State, 35, 30. And he gets hit from behind and dropped over the 25-yard line of the Wolfpack down at the 22-yard line. A 52-yard run by Sam James, finally caught by Tashawn Smith. Good block downfield by Kennedy McCoy.
Now, following West Virginia's final touchdown with a couple minutes to go, something played out on the point after touchdown, or the non-point after touchdown, that I've been asked to discuss here on the podcast. We discussed it on the broadcast. I thought it was a great move and smart football on the part of Neil Brown. To set the stage here, I'll let Tony explain what happened, but you also hear him throw it down to me on the sidelines as we were fleshing out what unfolded and why.
And West Virginia, on the extra point try, will take the snap, and the holder, Groudon, will take a knee. Groudon was standing up, the holder. He just took the snap and went down on a knee. Down on the field, Jed Drenning.
3-possession game, Tony. No chance at returning it for 2 to create a 2-possession game. Yeah. So no matter what, it remains a 3-possession game. It's a numbers game. Smart move.
Neil Brown out there like Pythagorean, right? handling the numbers. Handling the numbers out there. Okay, so yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you normally don't see it.
A squared plus B squared equals C squared. The theorem is named for Pythagoras, a Greek philosopher and mathematician in the 6th century BC.
I don't think Pythagoras ever coached, but if he did, I'm sure he would have made a good one. Now, Tony was right. It's not something you ordinarily see. In fact, I've never seen it happen, though it makes perfect sense. West Virginia had just scored to go up 44-27, a margin of 17 points. Now, you don't necessarily think in terms of points as much as you think at that point in the game in terms of possessions. So a 17-point lead is a three-possession lead. The other team has to have the football and possess it three times to come from behind and catch up to you. Now, let's say you kick the extra point successfully. That extends your lead to 18 points. It's still a three-possession game. So in the world of possessions, that really doesn't change anything a successful PAT. But what can change is the possibility of the defense, because of the rule instituted in 1988, blocking the PAT attempt and returning it the distance, in which case 2 points would be awarded to them. That would cut the lead to 15 points at 44-29. And guess what? That would mean your lead was just reduced from a three-possession lead to a two-possession lead. So the bottom line is the chance of having that PAT block and return is very small. But in the grand scheme of things, why take that chance at all? And if you're wondering how I know when that rule was instituted, it's because that first year it was in effect, I played for a football team, Terry Bowden's Samford Bulldogs, which, unofficially at least, was the first team in NCAA history victimized by that rule not once but twice. In fact, it happened to us not just twice in the same season, but twice in the span of a handful of games. Yes, crazy things can and do happen, and Neil Brown knows that, putting him once again ahead of the curve. Let me tell you something. His in-game attention to detail is unlike almost anything I've ever seen. As I was watching some of the in-game decisions he was making, some of the cracks between the keys against James Madison in that opener, I was talking to somebody on the sidelines and I told him, this is the kind of guy who can take an already high football IQ fan base and make it higher. That's what happened in St. Louis with Tony La Russa. If you know anything about St. Louis Cardinals baseball, if you've ever been to a game at Busch Stadium, you quickly realize that everybody inside that stadium knows the game of baseball inside and out. They understand the tactical side of it. It doesn't matter if it's the peanut vendor or the 78-year-old grandma sitting behind you. They know the game. And a lot of folks will tell you that when Tony La Russa came to town in 1996, based on the decisions that he was making between the lines, an already intelligent Cardinal fan base came to understand the game even a little better than they already had. Hot temper or not, and talented roster or not, it takes a pretty insightful guy to win 86 or more games 16 straight seasons, as La Russa did, before becoming the only manager in Major League history to retire in the offseason after winning the World Series. But it also takes a pretty insightful guy to win 31 games in 3 years at Troy University, especially when some of those wins came against the LSUs and Nebraskas of the world. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Those types of things don't happen by accident. And Neil Brown is the kind of high IQ football coach, a master of game management. He's not perfect, nobody is. But when it comes to seeing the ins and outs of what impacts a football game between the lines and the countless decisions that are made during the balance of 60 minutes, he is right up there with the best of them. Looking at things from all angles, West Virginia fans are already ahead of the college football curve in terms of how knowledgeable they are versus other fan bases. But studying a guy like Neil Brown on a weekly basis might eventually turn our A into an A+. He'll likely continue to do things like take a knee on a PAT when up by 17 late in the fourth quarter. And we'll likely continue to learn the why behind it. Now, before we jump ahead to take a look at the Kansas Jayhawks, one final point to make about the win over NC State. There's a lot of perks to being a sideline reporter. You get to spend a lot of time in the outdoors.
The weather has taken over all day long. A 3-hour and 3-minute delay. It resumed just a couple minutes ago.
You get a whiff of some interesting smells down there on the field.
He's been named the most revered mascot in college sports. Bevo made his first appearance at UT in 1916.
But the best part, without question, is the scenery. You get to see some really cool stuff. Now, we've visited some awesome venues through the years, but for my money, nothing beats this one. The home locker room after a West Virginia victory at Mountaineer Field, and the most spirited rendition of Hail West Virginia that your ears will ever be treated to. It happens after every win. Standing in there and taking it all in, watching these kids and these coaches after they leave it all on the field and come out on top, is easily the best part of this job. And that was the case again Saturday after the win over NC State. I posted the video I took from my phone on Twitter, but if you missed it, here's the audio, and even on a scratchy phone, it still sounds awesome.
Make a big noise, no matter what the people say. 'Cause it's not to fear the gangs
Come on, you old grads, join with us young lads. Well, I'm not that young, but join with us anyway, because next, we're going to pop the hood and take a quick look at the Mad Hatter's upstart, Kansas Jayhawks.
For more West Virginia Mountaineer football content, follow us at The Signal Caller on Twitter.
LSU's got to get up there quickly, be ready to snap. Edling's got to throw it into the end zone. Caught, but touchdown! You got to be kidding me! The Tigers roar! DJ Chark with the catch in the back of the end zone.
DJ Chark may have just saved LSU's season and Les Miles' job. So the catch is clean. The question is the clock. What does replay say about the clock? Clock's at zero. Has the ball been snapped? He's under center. Can't tell.
And now Auburn appears to be celebrating.
I think we did. The meaning is that the offense did not get the snap off prior to the clock.
We have had a cataclysmic reversal on the field. Auburn are the victors.
That was how the Les Miles era ended at LSU. Despite winning 77% of his games with the Tigers, including a national championship, Miles was relieved of his duties the morning after that controversial 2016 loss at Auburn that dropped his LSU Tigers to 2-2. 26 months would pass before Miles would coach again, but he did keep busy.
National championship trophy has been stolen.
Among other endeavors, Miles used his three seasons away to pursue another passion, acting in commercials.
Why are you on the roof, coach?
I thought it'd be dramatic.
Well, it is. Calm down. That trophy's practically a lightning rod.
A lightning what?
And also in dramatic roles with scripted lines, as Nelson, NASA engineer, in the Challenger disaster.
I'm telling you to do it. Quantify your results.
No, I can't. I can't do that with this data.
If there's an actor you'd most compare yourself to, who would it be?
I would not want to do disservice to anybody making that observation. Gene Hackman would be my guy.
If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners.
During his time away from coaching, Les Miles was still on the lookout to get back in under the right circumstances and with the right fit. By his estimation, that right fit came along when his old friend Jeff Long, the Jayhawks athletic director, picked up the phone. Miles accepted the offer, and just like that, he was back at a Power 5 program, albeit one of the most challenging rebuild projects in college sports. But that's not how Les Miles sees it.
If I were to characterize this as the most challenging Power 5 job in the country, what would you say?
I think that's hornswoggle. I don't give a damn what you think, to be honest with you. I look at the guys differently than you look at them, okay? I look at what they can be, not what they have been. And I think what we can be damn special.
Based on what evidence?
Based on what's going on in this building when we turn it up and we play and we practice.
From the outset, the hiring of a coach with the accomplishments of Les Miles certainly got the Kansas football fans' attention. And that's the first time in several years that in the basketball-crazed town of Lawrence, Kansas, even that has happened.
The hiring of Les Miles is the talk here at Johnny's Tavern in Lawrence.
Les Miles is the GOAT, and we're going to become a football school now.
I think he will make a difference.
And why is that?
Because I'm naive, and I'm not a skeptic. I'm not an armchair quarterback, and I think having a big-time guy to get people excited could make a difference.
It's a difference KU fan Sean Finn hopes will turn the program around in terms of recruiting.
His name and his championship pedigree gets him into the door of a lot of recruits that normally you wouldn't see considering Kansas.
Many fans hope Miles' unique flair brings new life into the program and inside Memorial Stadium.
I think he's going to bring a lot of energy. When things have been as far down as they've been, you really need a lot to pull people back in and make them think that things are going to be different this time.
He's nicknamed the Mad Hatter, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Well, she was right on that point. Three games into the 2019 season, Les Miles' maiden voyage in Lawrence, things have been interesting. They've also been a little uneven, maybe a touch disjointed, but certainly interesting. The Jayhawks stand at 2-1 heading into Saturday's matchup against West Virginia, the same record that Kansas had through three games last year. That 2018 Jayhawks team had that ugly loss against Nicholls State to open the season, but then they rebounded by snapping their road losing streak with a win at Central Michigan, and then by bombing Rutgers 55-14. Now, you may or may not remember, at that point last year, Kansas defensively looked like the most opportunistic team in college football. In each of those two wins, Central Michigan and Rutgers, the Jayhawks forced 6 turnovers. That was in back-to-back weeks. And as a result, if you were studying that football team, you found yourself wondering when that turnover well might dry up and when the other shoe might fall. And of course that happened as Kansas ended up losing 8 of its final 9 games last season. This year, it kinda sorta does feel different. At least maybe. Yes, there was the uninspired opening day win over Indiana State. And yes, the Jayhawks handed Coastal Carolina its first ever win over a Power 5 opponent. I might argue, at least in part in watching that game, that with Puka Williams returning to the lineup in Week 2 against Coastal Carolina, it sure seemed that Kansas was a little too bent on trying to feed him the football, and that made the Jayhawks far too one-dimensional, and the result was an ugly offensive performance in a 12-7 loss. But a light did seem to come on last Friday night in Chestnut Hill against Boston College. The kind of light the Kansas program hasn't basked in a long time. The Jayhawks' 48-24 win over the Eagles was their first road win over a Power 5 conference opponent since beating Iowa State in Ames way back in 2008. A lot of folks had fun with that fact on Twitter, pointing out things like that was 2 years before the iPad came out. At that point, Nick Saban had yet to win a single national championship with Alabama. But maybe just as impressive as the fact that they won was the nature in which they did it. The Jayhawks racked up 567 yards of offense. Their most on the road against a Power 5 opponent, you probably see a pattern emerging by now, since 2006 when they finished with 572 in an overtime loss at Nebraska. To give you some perspective as to how long ago that really was, Ndamukong Suh was a sophomore on that Cornhuskers team. Long story short here, West Virginia fans, don't look now, but Neil Brown's Mountaineers weren't the only Big 12 team to overcome a Week 2 disaster with a compelling Week 3 rebound performance. Another thing that impressed me about that Kansas win was the fact that they really didn't start fast. As a matter of fact, they struggled out of the gates. They fell behind 10-0 early, exactly the type of adversity that Jayhawks teams of the past might have folded under. But not this crew, not this time. With the 10-point lead and the crowd behind them, Boston College had seized the early momentum. That's when Kansas found themselves facing a critical 3rd-and-3 situation at their own 29. It was one of those moments, even though it was early in the game, late in the first quarter, that you kind of got the sense, look, you either convert here or this thing could get out of hand really fast. Well, instead of some of the mistakes that the Kansas offense had suffered through in the season's first 2 games, quarterback Carter Stanley took the snap, made a decisive read, and fired a shot to Stephon Robinson for a pickup of 27 into Boston College territory that quieted the BC crowd and gave the Jayhawks their first hint of swagger on a night that would see them with plenty of it.
Stanley back to pass. Tries to go downfield and has a receiver open. He makes the catch inside Boston College territory. Stephon Robinson
sitting up KU at BC's 44.
A few plays later, Kansas was in the end zone and the floodgates were opened. A Jayhawks offense that had been held scoreless for a span of 69 minutes, going all the way back to an opening drive touchdown against Coastal Carolina, erupted for 48 points against Boston College in the final 48 minutes of the game. Carter Stanley played what might have been the best game of his career at Kansas, connecting on 74% of his throws for 3 touchdowns, and adding another 23 yards, very hard-earned yards, on the ground. He was jumping, flying around, lowering his shoulder in the zone read run game with a fiery performance that inspired the rest of the Kansas offense. But the Jayhawks' true weapons of choice were Khalil and Puka. No, that's not Prince T'Challa's security detail in Wakanda.
In Bombay!
It's the two-headed monster that makes up the Jayhawks' rushing attack. Khalil Herbert led all Kansas runners with 187 yards against Boston College. This is a quick guy with tremendous vision who can really hurt you, as evidenced by the fact he's tied for the national lead with 7 runs of 20 or more yards. Mountaineer fans might remember, this is the same cat that 2 years ago in Lawrence gashed a banged-up West Virginia defense to the tune of 291 yards.
Every defender is within about 2 yards of the line of scrimmage for West Virginia. And a change of pace. Herbert is off to the races. He's got one man to beat, and he's gone. Herbert takes it all away.
Puka Williams, meanwhile, is exactly the kind of home run threat who keeps defensive coaches up at night. As a freshman last year, Puka Williams led the Big 12 Conference in all-purpose yardage at 151 yards per game, quite a feat, and his 121-yard performance against Boston College suggests that he's knocked the rust off after an early season suspension and settling back in for some big things in 2019 to follow up on his dynamic 2018 season. Puka Williams at 170 pounds and Khalil Herbert at 5'9" showcased the contrast in approaches between Boston College and Kansas. In some ways, it almost felt like this matchup was reduced down to BC's size against KU's speed. As Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald pointed out after the game, the Jayhawks, on their offensive and defensive depth charts combined, listed 22 players that came in under 200 pounds, while Boston College listed just 5 such players. And the disparity in speed was most apparent between the combination of Herbert and Williams and the Boston College defenders chasing them all over the field all night.
Herbert trying to make something happen here, and does. A big run for the Kansas back. 50, 40. Stiff arm still on his feet. Has a blocker in front of him. 15, 10, 5. Dives to the pylon, and they're going to rule him out of bounds at the 3-yard line. What a turn of events.
Delay. Williams has all kinds of space. He'll score.
On the defensive side for Kansas, we've talked on this podcast before about the fact that the Jayhawks' new coordinator, DJ Elliott, has a connection to West Virginia defensive coordinator Vic Koenig. Elliott was both a linebacker and a graduate assistant at Wyoming in the late 90s when Vic Koenig coached there. And Elliott's doing a solid job for Les Miles at Kansas after a couple solid performances by his defense in the Jayhawks' first 2 games of the season. They settled down against Boston College after a slow start and shut the Eagles out in the second half. 7 possessions, 0 points after the intermission, including 3 3-and-outs. Now, A.J. Dillon ran for 151 yards, but most of those yards came early as well, and once again, when Elliott's defense settled in, Dillon managed only 43 yards on his final 12 carries of the night. So, another sturdy performance by Jayhawks defensive coordinator DJ Elliott, who spent the offseason transitioning Kansas into a base 3-4 defense. And from a special team standpoint, one thing to point out, West Virginia punter Josh Groudon looking forward to punting against the coach in Les Miles, who recruited him out of Australia to come punt for him at LSU. And another special teams note, just something to keep an eye on this Saturday, Kansas is dead last in the Big 12 in kickoff coverage, and only 31% of the Jayhawks' kickoffs have resulted in a touchback. That's the second lowest figure in the Big 12. This means West Virginia should have some opportunities at some kick returns against a coverage unit that has had some struggles so far this year. So maybe if the Mountaineers do get a few chances like it appears they might, you could very well see them find a crease for a big return. This will be West Virginia's 4th trip to Memorial Stadium in Lawrence, Kansas as a member of the Big 12 Conference. And under ordinary circumstances, you find that place about as empty as the wind. But coming in on the heels of the most talked about win by this program in over a decade probably doesn't qualify as ordinary circumstances. Les Miles sure doesn't seem to think so.
We're going to have a home crowd that is spectacular. There is no question that this home crowd is going to be loud, eat a lot of food, drink. They're allowed to drink there now, right? They're going to drink and be loud and have fun. And we are going to play our butts off just as hard as we can. It's a good West Virginia team coming in, and they're worth it.
All right, folks, it's time to get in victory formation and take a knee and run the clock out here on episode 12 of the Signal Caller podcast. As always, I'd like to give a shout out to Champ Sedmok of Thomas, West Virginia, Mountaineer fan of the highest order and overall football aficionado. Champ predicted last week that Austin Kendall would have a breakout game, and I gotta say, with 272 yards and three touchdowns, Kendall was certainly a part of West Virginia's offensive success against the Wolfpack. Austin Kendall continues to impress me with his outright toughness. He took some more shots against North Carolina State and was unaffected by those pressures. Expect to see Kendall continue to improve throughout the course of the season and settle in with his accuracy as well. And now, on a very sad note, you folks have likely heard by now about the passing of Roane County football player Alex Miller, who died after collapsing on the field Friday night in a game against Clay County. Well, West Virginians tend to be at our best when we're asked to help one of our own. And we've been asked to do so again, not only to wear Roane County maroon or a number 80 today, which around the state has become known as Roane Raider Tuesday, but you also have an opportunity to make a donation to Alex Miller's family to help their situation in whatever small way you can. What I'm going to do now is give the information and address that you can make your checks payable to, where to send them. Now, I also plan to post this on Twitter at the Signal Caller. So I ask if you're listening, obviously if you're driving, please pull over. But I'll speak slowly. Please write this information down and do what you can to help Alex Miller's family. You can make your checks out to the Miller family and mail them to this address. Roane County High School, that's R-O-A-N-E, Roane County High School. Attention, Principal Bill Heiss / Miller family. Again, attention, Principal Bill Heiss, that's H-E-I-S / Miller family. It's One Raider Way, go ahead and spell it out, O-N-E, Raider Way, R-A-I-D-E-R, Way, Spencer, West Virginia, and the zip is 25276. Going through it all one more time, make your checks out to the Miller family and mail them to Roane County High School, attention, Principal Bill Heiss / Miller family, One Raider Way, Spencer, West Virginia, 25276. I'm fortunate enough to have a pretty broad platform here where I'm able to reach a lot of good people. And you folks have always responded with anything that I've asked. And this is obviously far more important and meaningful than any of the podcast-related stuff I've asked you to do before, which you came through in a big way for me. So let's do what we can for the Roane County community and for the Miller family in whatever small way possible. See what we can do to help them through this really, really tough situation. I've always said people from outside the state, this is the part about West Virginia that they don't get. All they see is that West Virginia doesn't rank very high nationally in household income or industry or any of the other metrics they typically use. But what they don't understand is that when something goes sideways in life, whether a horrible tragedy strikes or whether you simply break down along the road, there's no place that you'd rather be, because we're wired to help one another out, and we don't miss a chance to do that. So if you could somehow rank kindness or generosity or the size of the people's heart within a state, there's no way I believe anybody'd be ranked ahead of us. But again, I'll be posting that information on Twitter at the Signal Caller if it's easier for you to check things out there and get the address and the rest of the information. So it feels tough to get back to talking about football after that, but that's kind of what sports is really all about, to give us a positive distraction and something to pull for, maybe even when we need it most. So remember, folks, when it comes to Mountaineer football, trust the climb. That's something that I'm going to be reminding you of throughout the course of this season. Look, whether we win, whether we lose, sometimes these West Virginia games will turn out the way you want, and of course there will be times that they don't. Either way, keep believing and understand that ultimately, under Neil Brown, this is heading in the right direction. I know that this Saturday in Lawrence, I'm looking forward to what should be a pretty compelling matchup between what proved to be two of the Big 12 Conference's surprise teams of Week 3. All things considered, it should be a good one at David Booth, Kansas Memorial Stadium this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. Until then, I'll see you at the 50.